I've been invited to come today, and we have started a year or two ago covering the Bhagavad Gita, and we've taken it chapter by chapter, and today's happens to be chapter 12, Bhakti Yoga. Over the years, in my preaching work, I have met many Gujarati devotees, and they have told me many times, chapter 12 and chapter 15 are their favorite chapters, because many of them are naturally born Krishna Bhakta. So today, chapter 12 has 20 verses, and I have broken it down into three divisions. First, please hear a brief summary of chapter 12. Bhakti Yoga, pure devotional service to Lord Krishna, is the highest and most expedient means for attaining pure love for God, and that is the ultimate end of spiritual existence. Those who follow this supreme path develop divine qualities. And the reason that is true is because originally the soul is pure. The soul originally, being part and parcel of God, has all the qualities of God in a minute degree. It is only when the soul comes to the prison house known as Placentia, Los Angeles, the material world, and takes on a material body and identifies with that body, that's where the whole problem starts. But originally, the soul is pure. And it is the teaching of Lord Chaitanya, intrinsic with the soul is love of God. It's already there. We may be acting, posing, pretending to be man, woman, businessman, anarchist, president. These are all pretend play roles. But despite all these different roles, within the soul, there exists love of God. You take a match, and within that match is the potential of fire. Like we tell our children, don't play with matches, because you know there's potential of fire. And I have seen it doesn't take much to start a fire. Doesn't take much. The potential is there in the match. The trick is striking. Similarly, love of God is within everyone. Even the demon. Even your worst enemy. The trick is how to ignite it. That's why we do the chapter, devotional service. The reason we do devotional service is to awaken that love of God. This chapter 12, one of the shortest chapters, in fact, it is the shortest chapter. I see it in three parts. In verses 1 through 7, the comparison is made between the personalist and the impersonalist. Personalist, impersonalist refers to how somebody sees God or understands God. And it doesn't matter, Christian, Jew, Muslim, whatever the religion, that doesn't matter. The real question is whether or not someone understands God to be a person or not. And this was the beginning question of Arjuna in this chapter. Arjuna, in many chapters of Bhagavad Gita, the chapter opens with a question. Arjuna started it. He opened the door in chapter 2 when he said, Shishyastehaṁ śādhimāṁ tvaṁ prapanam. Krishna was simply the chauffeur, minding his own business, when Arjuna said, take my chariot to the front. Krishna said, okay. Krishna was not going to fight, correct? And Krishna is just the chariot driver. But when Arjuna said, Shishyastehaṁ śādhimāṁ tvaṁ prapanam, things now change. Then Krishna says, oh, you're my disciple? Now you're my disciple. Okay. Then let's go. And that's when Krishna began in chapter 2. Chapter 1, just driving the chariot. Arjuna said, take my chariot. Yes, sir. Right? You get a taxi, you get a limousine. Take me here. Yes, sir. But once Arjuna said, all right, so Krishna has begun in chapter 2. So, and many times, chapter 3, chapter 5, chapter 8, in each of these chapters, chapter 10 and 11, the chapter opens with a question by Arjuna. As soon as the question is asked, Krishna explains. That is relationship between guru and disciple. The guru's one job is to answer your questions. The questions have to be spiritual. Otherwise, you have a material guru. I'm sure many of you have financial planners, lawyers, doctors. They're material gurus. You respect them, do you not? Otherwise, why are you wasting your money? I know lawyers, they're not cheap. You pick up the phone, the clock, and then you get the bill. Right? So whether it's a lawyer, you get your car fixed, you go to the car guru. So everybody is approaching guru. But when you approach Sadguru, then the question is my soul, my spiritual identity. So when Arjuna asked Krishna, should I worship you personally or impersonally? Krishna immediately said, in my opinion, you should worship my personal form. This is not me. This is directly what's stated in Bhagavad Gita. I have read this Bhagavad Gita. I read it every year, cover to cover. So I've read the Bhagavad Gita many times. This point I'm sure of. When Arjuna asks this question, Krishna says, in my opinion, you should worship my personal form, which we do in this temple. In this temple, you don't just have some big Om sign or something else. You have the personal form of God, Radha Raman. Therefore, this temple is personalist temple. We are not Nirakar here. So here is the personal form of God, which when asked, Krishna said, this is, in my opinion, what you should be doing. Then Krishna went on to say, now, if you want to worship me impersonally, klesho, that's a lot of trouble. Spiritual life as it is already difficult. Why would you want to make it more difficult? So Krishna is saying, klesho adhikataraste-sham. To worship me impersonally, simply trouble. Krishna did say, yes, Eventually, you might get there. After all, in chapter 7, what did he say? Baunam janmanam ante gyanavanma. Yes. And if you actually follow the strict impersonal path, and it ain't easy, especially in Kali Yuga, it is very difficult to be a real impersonalist, not an imitation or a poser. But to be a real impersonalist, no chapan bog, no Sunday feast. You have to eat this much. As you know, no way I could be an impersonalist. I joined this society for prasad, no other reason. Then there are other things. You have to be equal to everyone. You have to be charitable. So many, you have to be completely free from any kind of material association. So Krishna said, yes, eventually you will come to the same point as the personalist. That's why he said in chapter 7, Bhavanam janmanam ante gyanamangman prapadyate. You will surrender the impersonalist, but when? After many, many births. And what will you conclude? Vasudeva sarvam iti. Which is where the personalist begins. The personalist begins with that understanding. Otherwise, why worship? Unless you are convinced that this Krishna, Vasudeva, is everything, why would you worship him? That's why we surrender. Because you have to become convinced. We were learning this morning in this morning's class. Asamardva. By definition, God is that object. There is no equal, no superior. If you are worshiping a god or a deity and he's not Asamardva, you're cheating yourself. Your god, whichever god it is, had better be Asamardva. No one equal and no one superior. Otherwise, hey, you can worship whoever you want. And we know all over the world people are worshiping so many things. But the first question to ask is this person or deity or thing I'm worshiping Asamardva? That there's nothing equal or superior. I've done the research. I've done the homework. My conclusion, it's Krishna. I'm Krishna's salesman. If somebody asks me, I'm going to tell them, well, since you've asked me, I recommend worship of Krishna. You buy a car. You go online. You hear from others. You do your due diligence. And you get the best car for your money. Right? Same way with religion. Investigate. Check them all out. I did that. Ain't no religion got samosas. Only this religion. Show me something better than palak paneer. Show me something better than, what is that thing? Gulab jamuns. Chole. Huh? Rasgulla. Ain't nobody got it better. What to speak of? Bhagavad Gita. Bring your book. Come on, bring your Bible. Bring your whatever. Stand it up next to Bhagavad Gita. I was raised on Bible. All right? But compared to Bhagavad Gita, no comparison. And what to speak of Srimad Bhagavatam? Bible is one book. Quran is one book. Bhagavatam is 18 Bibles. There's more information, obviously. If you're really interested in the subject matter of God and the Absolute Truth, objective inquiry, Vedas. And it's well-known fact, right? Countries are known for different things. Italy is known for cooking, right? French are known for lovemaking, right? America is known for Coca-Cola. Right? Japan used to be technology, right? Now China, what's manufacturing? What's India known for? Religion. That's your heritage. India is known as that country or subcontinent which has the complete science of religion. The next part of chapter 12, verses 8 through 12, divisions of faith. Now, this section is important. So I'm going to spend a little time on this middle section of chapter 12. Because after Krishna explains that you asked the question, Arjuna, I've answered it, you should worship my personal form, then Krishna gives you options. Like sometimes your company gives you stock options, right? How many of you got stock options? Right. So, or when you have a contract, sometimes there are options. So, here's another reason why I like Krishna. What I like about Krishna is he gives you options. Here's what he says now. Just fix your mind upon me, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Engage all your intelligence in me. Thus you will live in me always without a doubt. There it is. Simple, right? Yeah. Easier said than done. But that's what Krishna is saying. Here it is. Fix your mind on me. After all, I am God. And he said in chapter 7, there's no one equal to me. Right? Engage your intelligence in me. Thus you will live in me. Everybody is living in something. Right? You hear on the radio or in the TV, right? These super athletes. They're into themselves. They built their, like, you know, what is that guy? LeBron James, his brand. Okay? His whole world is based around him. Right? Or if somebody's into a particular actor or actress or singer, right? Everybody's got the Twitter now and the competition. Who's got the most followers, right? So everybody's into something. So Krishna's saying, hey, if you can fix your mind upon me and engage your intelligence in me, you're in me. That's what it means to be a bhakta. To be a bhakta means you're into Krishna. Like, say you're socializing with somebody at a party or something. So one of the things you'll ask them is, so what are you into? Right? Oh, I'm into cooking. I'm into business. So if somebody asks me, what are you into? I'm into Krishna. That's my thing. I'm into Krishna. That's option number one. Krishna, being most intelligent, knows not many people can do step number one. Here's step number two. My dear Arjuna, O winner of wealth, what's that name? Dhananjay. Thank you, Rambai. If you cannot fix your mind upon me without deviation, which is what he said, then follow the regulative principles of bhakti yoga. In this way, develop a desire to attain me. So this is where I am at. I'm not on that first platform. I'm on this stage. I am doing the regulative principles of bhakti yoga. I took initiation from Srila Prabhupada. He has given me a program of how to live every day. That's called the regulative principles of bhakti yoga. When I got initiated in April of 1974, I had to make vows. No more eating meat, fish, and eggs. No more intoxication. No sex outside of marriage, only for procreation. No gambling. Then on my beads every day, minimum, chanting the Maha Mantra 108 times 16. That was the vows I made. That is the beginning of the regulative principles of Bhakti Yoga. And then you read other books, Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. It comes out to 64 regulative principles. You don't follow all of them all the time, but there are 64. Just like most of you weren't here, we started the program with worshiping Tulsi. That's a regulative principle of Bhakti Yoga. Some of you, I'm sure, at home, you have your altars. Before you eat, you offer to Krishna. That's a regulative principle of Bhakti Yoga. If you follow Ekadashi, that's a regulative principle of Bhakti Yoga. If you fast on Janmashtami or Radhastami, Nom Rami, like that, all the avat, days of incarnations, that's a regulative principle of Bhakti Yoga. Why? Sometimes people say, why do I got to do all this? Here's the reason. By doing it, you develop a desire to attain Krishna. And that's what you should be noticing personally in your lives. If you're actually on this second platform, you should be noticing your desire to attain Krishna should be increasing. If it's decreasing, something's wrong with the program. I've said many, many times, just like a balance. If something goes here, the other one goes up. They can't both go up, right? You've seen the scale. One goes down, one goes up. So, you know you're making advancement in spiritual life because your spiritual desires are increasing and your material desires are decreasing. They can't both go up. That is fool's paradise. No, material desires decrease as spiritual desires increase and vice versa. Now, there's another option. Option number three. All right, Krishna knows. All right, not everybody's going to do that. So here's option number three. If you cannot practice the regulations of Bhakti Yoga, then just try to work for me. So here in the temple, you have many workers, right? That should be encouraged. Everyone should be, you use that word, seva, right? You make the announcements. We need someone to do flower seva. We need someone to do garlands, right? There's so much seva. And the job of the managers of the temple is to facilitate that people can work for Krishna. That's why we do festivals, right? You do many festivals here, yes? You do festivals here? Those festivals are simply an opportunity for people to do. We do the Sunday feast. You have the arti trays, right? People can sponsor to do the art. That's seva. That's what, as managers, you're supposed to be doing. You're supposed to be racking your brains how people can work for Krishna. Question, why? Because by working for me, you will come to the perfect stage. See how great it is? See how great it is? That even though, all right, you couldn't do the first two items, Krishna says, option number three, work for me, you'll come to the perfect stage. This is what I like about Krishna. He gives you these great options. He's not done. Option number four. If, however, you are unable to work in this consciousness of me, then try to act, giving up all results of your work, and try to be self-situated. Prabhupada explains in his purports that due to social, family, or other reasons, somebody may not even be permitted to do work for Krishna. A few months ago, a lady from Croatia, she's married to a Muslim man, but she likes Krishna. So she met me at the ISKCON San Diego temple. She snuck off and was able to, I think her husband was on a business trip, so she came to the, but she told me her situation. And then she called me once and said, it is very difficult for me to do any kind of devotional service for Krishna because of my husband. So I tried to give her some advice how she can do something without causing a big scene at home. Because it could be a big thing. So I gave her some suggestions. Okay, do this, do like this, like just something to keep you connected. Option number 5. There's a fifth option yet. Okay, Krishna says, if you cannot take to this practice, then engage yourself in the cultivation of knowledge. Which is why Prabhupada emphasized, distribute the book. Because by reading these books, I became convinced by reading Prabhupada's books. This giving out these books, you have no idea who is going to get that book and how it's going to. You have no idea. In the temple in LA, they have hundreds of stories of people who got a book one way or the other, and it changed their lives. These books are so powerful. Better than knowledge is meditation. And better than meditation, renunciation of the fruits of action. So, temple managers, when it's time that you want to collect funds for the new temple, right? That's one of your objectives. Here's what you say to people. You go through the checklist. You can't do this, can't do this. Then renounce the fruits of your work for a good cause, such as developing the temple. Make it something that they'll want to. It's all in the presentation. Make sense? And there are other things. There are other statements which you can use. Statements by Krishna in the Bhagavatam. That it, something like, if somebody helps do a garden in the temple, the person gets such nice rewards in the afterlife. Or if somebody donates for a temple, lots and lots of perks. So there are many things like that. In one place, Prabhupada said, if you give charity to a Brahmin, in your next life, whatever you gave, you get that back double. Any investment you're doing that? Double? Of course, it's in your next life. Ah. And then Prabhupada said that if you give charity to a Mahabhagavat, that punya comes back in your next life in unlimited multiplications. Unlimited. For by such renunciation, one can attain peace of mind. So many times, people have asked me, Swamiji, please, I want peace. And they expect that I have a magic wand. Yeah, one second. Hold on. No. My favorite story, I was in Panama. I was speaking in like the person, they owned the whole building, 50 floors. Very, very wealthy Sindhi man. He was a follower of Satya Sai Baba. But we did a program in his house. So after the program, the lady was asking me, I want peace. So I said, okay, Do you eat meat? She goes, yes. I can't give you peace. I said, do you drink liquor? She goes, oh, yes. Can't give you peace. Do you gamble? She goes, of course. Strike three, you're out. Yes, my friend told me there's a group, the Gita group, somewhere in Panama. Every week, every other week, they chant this 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. They know it by heart. Because that they do that like every 2 weeks. It's a Gita club, bunch of ladies. But after chanting Bhagavad Gita, they play cards. I was like, what? I said, yeah. And I know many of the people because they come to my programs. So when he said this one, I said, her? She goes, yeah. But they're just playing for fun. No, no, no. There's money. I said, oh, my God. I don't think they understand 12th chapter of Bhagavad Gita. Anyway, what can be done? So, in the last portion of chapter 12, so I just went through all the options. I think there was 5, 6, or 7 options, right? So in the last section, Krishna describes the pure devotee. And when you read that chapter, your favorite devotee will come to mind, such as Prahlad, such as Hanuman, right? There are so many examples of great, exalted, pure devotees. And Krishna describes these qualities. There's a little repetition, and Prabhupada says the reason why there's repetition is because Krishna wants to impress upon us how these qualities are so important. Now, there's an interesting concept here. These qualities of the great devotee, you do not have to practice them separately. You don't have to, like, take a special course to develop these qualities. These qualities are already there. Remember I said at the beginning, the soul is pure. Did I not say that? So when you read the description in this chapter of the qualities of a pure devotee, they're already there within you. They just have to come out naturally. It's not an artificial thing. How do they come out? By simply doing something of bhakti yoga. How many of you read Bhagavad Gita every day? I wish every hand was up. You read Bhagavad Gita every day, you will start to see these beautiful qualities come out. How many of you are chanting mala every day? Good. You will see these qualities will come out. And, like I was mentioning, if you do seva, the more that you do seva for the temple, these qualities will, they're already there. They're just now covered. So you don't have to worry about developing them externally. Just do something in terms of bhakti yoga. Do some, what does Krishna said in chapter 9? Yat karoshi, yadashnasi, yajjohosi, tadasi yat, yat tapasyasya konteya, tat kurushva mad arpanam. One time I met a man, he said, Prabhu, I can't do anything. I cannot do chanting. I cannot read these books. I can't do nothing. I said, fine. No problem. I said to him, when you get in your car to go to work, when you turn on that car, just say one thing. My Lord Krishna, today I offer this day to you. I said, can you do that? He goes, I could do that. You have begun bhakti yoga. Just do that. Do something. It's not hopeless. Something is better than nothing. Krishna gave us, he showed us. He said, Okay, if you can't do this, then do this. You can't do this, do this. Right? He gave you 5, 6, 7 options. Pick one. Eventually, you'll come to the stage which described in the final portion of this chapter. Now the question becomes, how can I get the desire, the impetus to do this? That's the question. How do I get the desire to do this? Well, that's my job. My job is to convince you to at least, how shall we say, think about it. Those of you who are already doing it, go ahead, don't worry about me. But I'm more concerned with those who are not. Those who are not, in other words, those who didn't raise their hand, my job is to somehow encourage, enthuse, enliven, cajole, whatever it takes, beg you to begin. That's what the preacher's job is. To inspire someone to take the next step so that they begin bhakti yoga. So, one way I do it is I give a blessing. So, what I ask you to do now is fold your hands. Close your eyes. My dear Lord, please bless these devotees. Inspire them because you're in their heart. And enlighten them and give them the impetus so they will begin bhakti yoga. Remove all the obstacles in their heart and let them become attracted to loving you and serving you. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Do we have any questions? Yes, Narendra Bhai. I don't know about faster, but you pick up at some point, everything is dependent upon your enthusiasm, your sincerity. That's what it's dependent on. In other words, whatever platform, Prabhupada used to tell us, just be serious and sincere. You know, Shishi Radharaman Bhagavan Ki Jai. You have how many children you had? 3. So when they were going to school, I'm sure you guided them in such a way, right? And you encouraged them and enthused them so that they would get the most. They tried their best. That's all Krishna is looking to see. You know better than me. When they were building the bridge to Lanka, Hanuman and the other monkeys are building big, throwing big boulders. And there was this little, I don't know, rabbit, squirrel, spider. There's different accounts. And Hanuman said, hey, you know, get out of our way here. We're working here. And Ram said, no. That little, what is it? Squirrel is doing his quota. He can't do the same as big, big Hanuman. But so that's what Krishna's looking for. Krishna's not expecting you, like Arjuna, to go on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. No, he wants you to fight your Kurukshetra at home. Everybody's got a Kurukshetra going on. Yeah, I do. It's in every family. Yes, so let me finish. So you do your quota. You do as much as you can. Prabhupada used to tell us, Krishna is not looking to see what you've given. He's looking. What is he holding back? All right. Yes. Yes, that's mentioned in Gita. Don't disturb anyone. I'm not disturbing anyone. But I am a salesman. So as a salesman, like, hey, I don't bother anybody. But sometimes, for instance, when I'm out shopping, somebody may, I don't hassle anybody. But if somebody asks me, all right, you asked, and I'm going to answer. Right? So, I'm a salesman. Everybody in this world is preaching. There are billboards. You watch your TV shows. After so many minutes, what comes on? Commercial. They're preaching. So, everybody's preaching. Everybody. All over the world. So, That's good. So now, the question then will become, what is your understanding of this name God? How do you understand the Supreme? Which is a discussion we can have personally. You follow? This morning, I was giving the example that when Krishna was in the wrestling arena. Everyone was seeing Krishna, but they were seeing different. Mother Yashoda saw what? Her son. The cowherd boys saw their friend. Mathura residents saw, ooh, we had heard so much about this Krishna. Now we are seeing. The gopis saw Cupid. Everyone is see, and what did Kamsa see? Death. Because that night before, he had some really bad dreams. And all those dreams that Kamsa had the night before told him, bye-bye. This is your last day, Kamsa. You're going down. So Kamsa was seeing death personified. So we use this word God, but depending on how this word is understood, what is your vision, it could be different. That's why we read Bhagavad Gita and Srimad Bhagavatam when we want to educate ourselves to come to the most scientific understanding of this word, God. You follow? Yes, Prabhu. Hari Bol. In the mic, please.
Once again, I have a practical question. So I'm the kind of person who likes to walk the walk, not talk the talk. So when you say, I dedicate this day to you, Krishna, what does that really mean?
It means that you're at least recognizing that you have some consciousness of God. It's a step. You're making at least some conscious effort. You could say it's the beginning of surrender. You're not going to say that just to, right? For instance, I don't know about in the Hindu culture, but in the Western culture, right? When they get married, they make vows, right? They say things to each other that they're not going to say to anybody else, right? You make, unless it's the Mormon religion, that's another story. But usually one man, one wife, right? And so you surrender to each other, right? So when I told the man, just say, Think about what you're saying. I'm offering this day to you, Lord, means you are recognizing that he's superior, you're subordinate. That's a big step for a certain class of people. It's a first step. You will see in Bhagavatam, second canto, when Shukadev actually begins talking. First canto, there's no Shukadev until he appears in the final chapter of the first canto. All of a sudden, Shukadev appears. He begins talking in canto 2. He doesn't start talking about Radha and Krishna. The first chapter of second canto, when Shukadev, first step in God realization, which is meditation on Virata Rupa. There's no Krishna Leela. No. He starts at ABC. That you begin to look at the material world in terms of a personal conception of God. God's eyes, the sun and the moon. God's bones, the mountains. The rivers and the lakes, God's veins. It's a conception. It's a beginning. It's a meditation. In this chapter in the second canto. Then he goes on to the Lord in the heart. So it progresses. So it's a beginning step.
Okay, so my next question is, what's next?
The next step?
Most of us are already there. That we believe Krishna is superior to us.
Good. Next step is to get a life coach. A spiritual life coach. I won't use the G word. Oh. Get a spiritual trainer. It's like, how many of you belong to a gym? Oh, all right. Sometimes the gym, you pay a little extra money, they'll give you a personal trainer. And what does that trainer do? He gets you in shape, right? And you see on the TV, right? They have every day there's a new like workout regimen, right? And there's a guy, and he's, you know, I think the big one now is PX90 or something like that, right? That's the big fad. So there's a teacher. So if you want to go to the next step, right? You're a computer, right? So you had teachers, did you not? So, if you want to get to the next step, same thing Krishna told Arjuna. If you want to learn the truth, approach a self-realized soul. Inquire from him, render service, you'll get the knowledge. Which is actually the second platform that Krishna mentioned, where you begin the regulative principles of bhakti yoga. There are three kinds of gurus. Diksha, Shiksha, Vartma, Pradarshaka. Here, I'm Vartma, Pradarshaka. I'm showing the way. When you take me personally and say, Prabhuji, I would like, which some of you have, Prabhuji, I need you to personally, then I become Shiksha. Then, usually what happens, after a long time, Shiksha, then someone takes Diksha. We have here in this temple, Srila Prabhupada. We are distributing and reading from his book. So he's everybody's Shiksha Guru. So start reading Prabhupada's books. You're definitely, once you start regularly reading Prabhupada's books, you're on that second platform. You're beginning the regulative principles of bhakti yoga. If you continue to read, you're there. You continue to do that. According to the Bhaktivedanta Sindhu, by staunch, strict adherence to the regulative principles of bhakti yoga, you then come to the stage of spontaneous. When you reach the stage of spontaneous bhakti, Haribo, spontaneous. Now, I'll give Gadadhar as an example. Would you not agree with me that he is spontaneously attracted to kirtan? Yes or no? Do you have to beg him? Do you have to push him? You just have to put the mic there, Prabhu Singh. Right? I'm spontaneous when it comes to prasad. So there's hope for me. Yes, preaching. Yes. So, as you develop these regulative principles of bhakti yoga, you will start to notice that you are naturally attracted to a certain aspect. For instance, I know many, they love to do the deity, dress the deities. That's good, right? Some like, they'll always there, they'll serve out the prasad. You don't have to ask them, they're there. You follow? So, in due course of time, naturally you will find a service or services. Nobody has to tell you. You already have that self-motivation. When you got there, as we say, you're smoking, man. You're good. Not this smoking, no. You the man. Okay? You're fired up. Okay? More questions? Or should we close here? Thank you very much. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Hari Bol.